Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Dave Malden, 16 years of career experience, a technician with Loudoun County Fire Rescue in Virginia on Rescue 20, creator and operator of the Daily Refinery page on social media. My conversation with Dave was as if we've been bros for a long time that were catching up at a restaurant over drinks, shooting the shit about the fire service, but also having key conversations and not tiptoeing over deficiencies that we have both experienced and seen. My favorite quote from Dave is this: "I've been on the job for 16 years, but into the job for the past two." With that, I present Mr. Dave Malden.
Hey, what's up? I'm Dave Malden. Been in the fire service for about 16 years. I tell people probably been on the job for 16, been in the job for about two now. How far you want to go back with this, Danny?
I always like to ask. So from the beginning, I mean, did you always know you wanted to be a fireman? How did it come about?
No, not really. Going back, my dad was a member in the Danville life-saving crew. And I mean, I remember being a little kid running around there, you know, seeing the apparatus and seeing him, but not really know kind of what he did. I know he had a pager. I think that thing used to annoy the crap out of me. It went off all the time. He was pretty busy. He always got up at night. He was in the day he was a high school teacher, and he always had his pager on. At night, he was, you know, running calls, doing that stuff. So that was definitely a part of my life that I remember noticing. But then, you know, went through school, went through high school. I tell people I was probably with the right people doing the wrong things, you know. I don't say I was with the wrong people, because they're my boys, they're my homies, and that's what we did. We just cut up and we were into all kinds of stuff. But tried the college route. Wasn't ready for that. I was ready for the party life. Wasn't ready for the study life. And then I remember coming back home, and my dad was like, "All right, well, you tried some real world work. You've tried some college work. And in this life, there's usually three things. There's work, school, and military. So hop in the car. Let's go to the recruiting station." So we went to the recruiting station. I'd always been kind of into sports, kind of athletic. So I was like, well, let me go, I'll try the Navy. And I figured if I'm going to go in the Navy, I'll try to do the best I can, you know, and I'll try to go, you know, be a SEAL. So I signed up for BUDS and, went into the Navy, didn't make it through BUDS, gave it a shot. The best way I can probably describe it is, I had never been placed in a situation of being uncomfortable, from the majority of my life, and I was not ready for that. Went through the Navy again. I was, I guess, a glutton for punishment. I went back to BUDS a second time, didn't make it a second time.
Okay.
I got out of the Navy and went to construction. Didn't know really what to do after that. So I went into the construction world, and I didn't grow up with a hammer in my hand. My dad was a teacher. He wasn't very, you know, tool oriented and anything like that. My first day on the construction job, man, they had me counting lumber, and he said, "Hey, I want you to go over there and count that green lumber." And he was talking about pressure treated lumber, and I didn't have a clue what he was talking about. Was in the construction world for quite some time, you know, I'd say 4 or 5 years or whatever, and moved through residential to commercial. I was pretty comfortable with residential. I'd worked my way up to a superintendent. We were doing piggyback style condos, single family homes, stuff like that. Went to commercial. Commercial was a different world. Going from, you know, national production builder, I had four plans. They were the same houses or same condos I built all the time. to now we're building a school, and I live in Maryland, so it was actually the Maryland School for the Deaf here in Frederick, Maryland. And I was way behind the eight ball. These guys, you know, were union contractors, been on the job forever, and I was just very unprepared for that commercial stuff. And I remember thinking, you know, I was like, man, this is just it's not what I think I should be doing, not what I want to do. And I really missed the brotherhood and the com. I mean, I know a lot of people say it, but yeah, and I understand what they mean. Like, I miss the brotherhood and the camaraderie of the military. Those were my dudes I would do anything for. And the fire service was mentioned, and I said, well, let me give it a shot. So I applied to a bunch of departments in the, I guess, tri-state area, you know, Maryland, Northern Virginia. I didn't know anything, man. Like, I remember I went to Hagerstown, Maryland's like CPAP test, physical agility test. They had us all sitting in a trailer, and the guy walks in. He's like, well, who here doesn't have turnout gear? Raise your hand. And everyone looks like they know what's going on, and I raised my hand. I was like, well, since I don't even know what turnout gear is, that's me, you know. But I knew, I was like, well, I might not know anything, but I think I'm pretty athletic, and I'll just try hard, you know.
Right.
And I remember doing the test and going up the tower and coming back down, and there was like a finish line. There was two chiefs there recording times. And the one guy was like, well, what was his time or whatever? And the guy looks at the stopwatch, and he's like, his time was, holy shit, son. He's, you know, and I said, did I do good? He goes, yeah, you did awesome, you know. But they're only picking two guys for the whole process, and it was kind of just the first place they called me, which was Loudoun County, man. And as you know, I remember like it was yesterday. I was walking in through on the job site still, in knee-high mud. It had been raining for weeks, you know, and the lieutenant at HR called me. He was like, Mr. Malden, this is so and so from Loudoun County, and I want to just let you know. And I said, yes. He's like, well, I just want to, I said, yes, sir. Where do I start? You know? And he's like, well, I didn't even tell you you were hired yet. And I was like, well, am I? And he's like, yes. And I was like, all right, cool. What do I do? You know? So that's kind of how I got into it, man. And then, you know, rest is kind of history. 16 years later, here I am.
For those that don't know, including myself, can you tell us a little bit about Loudoun, the size, how many stations, your roughly calls,
Sure.
your stats, stuff like that?
Yeah. So Loudoun's, it's a cool place, man. I mean, you've got a real huge diversity of the type of calls that we would run. It's about, I think it's about 520 square miles, population 400 to 500,000, that's 450 ish. It's got, I mean, you can be literally in a, I guess, a denser metro area, not like inner city, but more metro. And then you can be, you know, literally work overtime the next day or get detailed that night or whatever, and be in a rural box setting with cows, you know, behind the firehouse, eating grass. So it's like, you know, it's a very diverse situation. We've tons of We're known as like the data center capital of the world. I think like 70% of the world's internet traffic literally runs through Loudoun County with all the data centers. So that's a whole entity, a whole another monster to tackle. The Silver Line from the Metro just extended out a couple years ago, so now we have Metro stuff going on with that, with rail car and all that jazz. So it's pretty cool. I think we run about probably 40 to 45,000 calls a year. The station I'm at, which is in Leesburg, we run about 40, I think we did about 4,500 calls last year. So not like crazy busy, like a Detroit or, you know, Baltimore, DC or something like that, but moderately busy, I guess you'd say.
I mean, 4,500, that's still pretty damn good. So you mentioned Leesburg Station, and I know that station because I am a fire nerd. I'm a buff. I'm pretty sure they just got a new tiller. If I'm correct, Leesburg.
Yeah, it's coming in.
Okay, so it's not here yet. So they're replacing the Seagrave with the Pierce.
We have a that was old. We have a Pierce now, and they're bringing in a new Pierce. It's almost
Okay.
identical to what we have.
Okay. So I know that station because it's kind of unique. Because like the way Loudoun is it somewhat like how PG is, like volunteer houses have career staffed in it?
Yeah, it's a combination system.
Okay.
And a couple of years ago, we went all 24 across the board. So, but there's still, a huge volunteer presence in a lot of the firehouses too. Whereas the even though 24, a lot of the volunteers still come in from 6 p. to 6 a. during the night. So yeah, it's got that sentiment to it for sure.
Okay, and I just want to make sure that the house I'm picturing, the one of the truck numbers or some of the truck numbers, something with 620, correct?
Yeah, we're 620.
Okay, I just want to make sure that the
One
what
house.
showing the
It's
videos
not a
of them
problem.
pulling out is what's matching what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah, so my firehouse is engine, truck, and rescue. Engine probably runs out of those 4,500 calls, 60 to 70% of them. I mean, it's first out.
Okay.
So it's the engine rolls, and sometimes they get hammered at night big time. And sometimes, we sleep through the night. It's just how it is.
You're right. Okay. And how many stations approximately does Loudoun have?
Don't quote me on this. I'm pretty sure 20 staff stations.
Okay.
20 staff stations. I think I'm not sure if that's including Mount Weather or not. It's like a government, but it's kind of in with us. But also within that, we have five aerials. That includes where I'm at with one of those, and we have four rescues. Two of those rescues are cross-staffed, and two of those are staffed fully 24/7.
Okay, and you're on the ones that staff 24/7, or you guys cross?
Yes, sir.
Okay, awesome, awesome. So what exactly? I'm assuming the rescue runs any sort of MVA, like with entrapment or pin in. What other calls does the rescue run?
I mean, we run everything, man. I
Oh,
mean,
okay.
like I said, typically the engine's kind of first out. But if the engine's on a run, and a med local drops, we'll go. Or if the engine and truck are on a run and the med local drops, we'll go. If they're, I don't know, busy doing smoke detectors, or you know what I mean, and like, hey, can you guys grab that? We'll definitely go. I mean, obviously our specialty is tech rescue. Anything from high angle confined space, structural collapse, swift water, trench. We just got a recently with we just got a TRSU, a tech rescue support unit, which is awesome. Massive box truck that houses a lot of our trench and collapse components that we can work with that stuff in.
Okay, awesome. All right, so first off, I want to say thank you for what you do, because I say this because the fire service likes to pick and jab. Ladder guys always get shit from engine guys,
Oh
vice
yeah.
versa.
Oh yeah.
Res and
Nonstop.
rescue guys are always looked at. But seriously, like in all seriousness, the fact that you and anybody else that's assigned to a heavy rescue, you have to wear so many hats, man. And like I would love to be on the rescue, but then I look at like rope, trench, high angle, water. Fuck that. Like, nope, I'm good. Appreciate that there's guys like you, guys and girls like you who love being on that truck, wear all those hats, have to know all those skills. Like anything rescue, man. Like I'll watch, like I'll rescue, they'll put together some freaking thing with legs and ropes, and like I'm just like, what the hell is that? So I appreciate what you do because it's not easy being on a rescue truck because you have to know so many different avenues and things, you know, with whatever calls come in. So, I mean, this is no jab. It's a sincere, like, thank you, because we need people like you, because I have zero freaking interest in learning any of that.
As they say, Chick-fil-A, my pleasure. So, no, man, I mean, it is a lot, dude. I mean, I'm not, well, I'd say I definitely wasn't in the past, a guy that like visits firehouses or, you know, really, I mean, I sitting around and the table and guys are talking about, hey, man, you know, it, so and so's at this firehouse and doing that. I'm in Baltimore or PG or FDNY. And I'm like, do you think they sit around the table and say, hey, so and so at Loudoun County is doing that? I'm like, they probably don't, you know. That's was my like just what my mentality. Where I'm going at is my wife and I were up in New York for to go see Broadway one time, and the weather was horrible, man. And we were near Rescue One. And I had just got assigned to the rescue here at Loudoun. And I was like, look, I've never really been a visit the firehouse guy, but we're near Rescue One in New York, you know, in Manhattan. Let me just walk past it to see what the building looks like. I just want to see what the building looks like. And we walked up to it, you know, and I want to be very respectful of that house. You know, they had the individuals, you know, pictures of the individuals that passed away at 9/11. And there was a guy sitting out front. And he's like, hey, man, what's up? And I was like, hey, man, I just wanted to see what y'all's firehouse looks like. I mean, I'm on the job down south. He's like, well, come on in, man. You know, and I was like, really? He's like, yeah, dude, come on in. He's like, we just got our ass chewed by the chief because the house is a little dirty. So we're running around, you know, doing things right now, but come on in, you know? And we were there. My wife and I were probably there for like 2 hours, man, just talking.
Damn, that's
Yeah, it was
awesome.
cool. And one of my biggest takeaways was the guy was, I don't remember his name. It's been a while. But he was just getting promoted. So he was leaving the rescue. And he said, I told him where I was at and what I just got assigned to. And he said, you know, 5 years. And I'm like, what do you mean 5 years? And he's like, it will take you 5 years to learn every tool on this rig. There's just so much to it.
Crazy.
And you know, and with all the disciplines and everything, he goes, it just takes time, man. And I mean, and even now, I mean, I don't claim to be the best rescue, the tech rescue guy, you know what I mean? I enjoy it. I mean, there's guys that I work with on my crew that probably run light years around me. But you know, we do our disciplines now, and by the time we started a con space drill or a trench drill, by the time we get back around to hitting trench again or con space again, you're like, man, what was that again? You know what I mean? It's just, there's a lot to it. So you really got to stay brushed up on that type of stuff for sure.
Absolutely, man. And that's what I mean. Like, it's crazy the fact that he said for them 5 years to learn, because that, I mean, it's a massive toolbox on wheels. Because I'm sure
Yes.
your rescue's a tandem axle, right?
No, single axle.
It's a single axle. Okay. But still, like, heavy rescue trucks are toolboxes on wheels with a plethora of things that you got to know. And, you know, I always try to be transparent and real with people. Man, you can't know it all. There's somebody, that's why I think the best type of crews are the crews where you have an individual that's good at this, this one's good at that, that's good at that. And then they all mesh together where if somebody's a little weak here, they go, hey, man, I got you quickly. Boom, there you go. Like, that's what you need to make an effect, in my opinion, an effective company.
I mean, and I know like this is probably hearsay or just, you know, us talking around the table, or I don't know this for, don't quote me on this, even though we're on a podcast, but I know we had discussed the possibility one time of like, if we had maybe all four staffed rescues instead of two fully staffed and two cross staffed, like making one rescue like the rope specialty rescue, making one like, you know, the trench, you know, specialty rescue, and kind of divvying out the what they all do, you know, to
Right.
make it a little bit more specialized across the board. But right now, I mean, we're all, you know, trained on all
Okay.
those specialties.
Okay. Okay. So you mentioned something earlier that I kind of want to just go right into. You mentioned 16 years of career experience. but here recently, 2 years into the job, and that kind of stuck out for me. So if you don't mind, like elaborating on that.
Absolutely, man. I mean, I guess when I first started, I just viewed it as a cool job, a very admirable and honorable job. And I don't want to say just a job, but I just figured it was something for me cool to do. And I enjoyed it. I think I excelled well early on. In recruit through recruit training and all that. I remember when I went through recruit school, I got top recruit and I like my first couple weeks out in the field. One of my close friends who I love to do to death was like, "You know what top recruit means out here?" I was like, "What's that, man?" And he's like, "Not a damn thing." And I was like, "Roger that, check," and he was right, you know what I mean, 100%. And I started, we have busier stations that just kind of stay busy. Even if we're not running calls, they just stay busier than most. And then we have, if you go out to the more rural areas, it's very well known. They're just slower stations. They don't run as many calls. And, there's some days, I mean, I spent more than one shift in a row and not running a single call. It's very hard to be in a station like that and completely consume 24 hours with training and PT.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? It's just
Yep, I've been there.
it drags you down. You probably it's a fight to not let it drag you down.
You damn right.
To my credit, I had great officers in a lot of these firehouses, officers that are just very knowledgeable, go-getter, aggressive guys. But I just kind of was like, all right, well, I'm just gonna do my thing. And I would still work out. If we were training, I would train and just kind of be present, not really be into it, but do what was required. I guess that's the best way I could put it. And along the way, I was like, well, let me do something else. I try to stay active outside. I mean, I'm big into jujitsu. I'm big into like climbing, mountain climbing, stuff like that. Started a business up, and then that really consumed a bunch of my time was running a business. It was like a contracting business. And once I got when we I sold the business a couple years ago, started getting more involved in the firehouse, and probably about 2 years ago, man, I said, you know what? It was like November, it's about 2 years ago. I said, for 1 month, I'm gonna when we go to the gym, I'm gonna put my turnout gear on, and I'm gonna breathe air every single time we go to the gym. Just to see like what happens, if I see what I learn, man. After the second time of doing that, I just started picking up all these personal nuggets. I'm like, why have I not been doing this all this time? I knew exactly how many breaths I had, when my vibe alert went off. I knew exactly, where my air was at, when the heads up display went amber. You know what I mean? I started and this is like really basic stuff, but I guess I just didn't pay attention to it, and now I was. And then the more I did it, I was like, man, this shit's fun. Like
Okay.
this is and the crazy thing is like the more you do it, and I know it's like not rocket science, it's kind of common sense, but the more you do it and the better you get at it, the more competent you get at it, the more fun it is. Because now it's like, all right, man, I got this, I can do this. And it was and then I just we started doing extra stuff, and I'm blessed with an awesome crew, man. Literally the best crew. I've worked with great crews, but where I'm at right now, 20 C shift, hands down, best crew in the county, man. Like we just mesh, it's like we don't even need to speak to each other sometimes. It's like telepathy just happens, especially on calls. And I've got some hitters, on my crew that are completely down for gear workouts and completely down for whatever. And that just kind of like started that path for me back when I started decided to put my gear on and get on air every single shift. And then the next summer, which was actually last summer, along the way of me doing that, I started learning about these like external classes, these conferences. I didn't really, I mean, I really, it sounds crazy probably to 99% of your listeners, but like, I didn't really know what FDIC was all about. I mean, I knew it was a place where, firemen went and hung out and learned some stuff. You know what I mean? I didn't even know like the process or the structure of it or any of that. So I was like, all right, well, I heard about this like one area called FDTN. And I heard it was like if you want the closest to realistic fire training you can get, go to FDTN. So I was like, all right, well, I'll try for FDTN and applied, didn't get in. And I was like, all right, well, we'll see what about another conference. And then a little time went by and they said, hey, we got shot an email and said, hey, we had a couple people back out. Are you still available? We've got a couple spots opening for FDTN. And I had been, full disclosure, man, I'd kind of been thinking about taking the next step up to lieutenant. And I haven't been on a rescue for 5, 6 years. I was like, I just kind of want to go back to some engine work. And because I do think new lieutenants should be on, engines, getting those reps in, especially in our county, the engines are running. So I was like, all right, I want to do engine ops. I went to FDTN last year and did the engine ops one class. Man, I can't tell you how awesome that place is. I was humbled quite a bit, they had some crazy heat wave going on. Like the day before we got there, it was like 80 and cool. The day we started, it was 98 and a heat index of like 115. And there's no shade
Nice.
anywhere in that place.
Right.
And guys are falling out. I mean, these are tough dudes, man. And I'm just sitting there. I was seeing stars. It was hot. And then, they get those sea containers pretty cooking pretty good too. I remember sitting in the class right when we started. It had the truck guys and engine guys, and Jim McCormick was showing a slide presentation, and he was like, "Hey, who here?" He showed a picture with a bunch of ladders all over the building, and "Who here would do this?" And I was like, "I would." No one else raised their hand. I was like, "All right, well, that's kind of." He's like, "Who here runs on the fire ground?" Hand went up. No one else raised their hand. And he goes, "You from the Mid-Atlantic?" And I was like, "Yes, sir." And he's like, going back to the ladders picture, he's like, "What kind of ladders do you run?" And I was like, I don't know. You know what I mean? I was like, I don't know. He said, "Well, it's only two cons, Alkalite Dewar Safety." And I still looked at him and I was like, and 50 dudes are looking back at me, and I was like, I don't know that answer, man. You know what I mean? And it hit me like talking about being humbled in front of a lot of people after you just raised your hand saying, yeah, I run on the fire ground. Yeah, I'd ladder every window. Well, I didn't even know what the two ladders were, So and I went up to him after. I'm like, sir, you just humbled me. I will know what I'm throwing. You know what I mean? It was a very good lesson of just some of the basics, man. Going to FTTN was just, it was a good move. It was a really good move. That was a catalyst that just kept it going. And then after that, I applied to the Georgia Smoke Diver program, got accepted to that, went to class 64.
Yeah, you're good. You're good. I'm talking my
Okay.
wife. You're fine.
Went to class 64 back in February. Didn't meet the standard. Didn't make it. And I can't, that place is on a whole nother level, man.
Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah, for sure.
I remember the Smoke Daddy Casto. He's like, you don't understand it. He goes, I picked the lint out of my Velcro. You know, that's how detailed I am about everything, you know? And to this day, I picked the lint out of my Velcro now. But no, I mean, a amazing group of people there. That place is just, it's awesome, man. I definitely want to get back there. Definitely want to get to that and succeed at that.
No, but what's really I can relate to you was the fact, like, you know, you say it's crazy that you didn't know between dual safety and Acolyte. And the thing is, though, we have some people out there that don't know that.
Oh
Like,
yeah.
I never knew that there was fire conferences until 2 years ago. And you know what I mean? It was like when I found out, I'm like, where was this at? Like, how come I didn't know about this? So you don't know what you don't know. But on the flip side, we have individuals in this business that couldn't tell you the make and model of the hose they have, the type of nozzles they have, like things that we should know because, you know, we're in that specialty field. That's like asking a police officer, what's the make and model of your gun? They should know. I would hope most of them know, but there might be some out there that, I don't know, it's whatever was issued to me. You know what I'm saying? Like
Right.
you're only as smart. You're only as smart, you know, with the information that you want to obtain for your, you know, for your knowledge of what you do. So the fact that you said that, I mean, I'm sure there's a couple of people that could attest to that because, you know, it took me a little bit to know that there was a differences in that because, you know, Alkalite weighs a crap ton
A
heavier
lot more.
than dual safety. So it's
Yeah.
like,
That was my first lesson.
but that's one of the things I'd love to, whenever I get a chance, once my daughter gets a little older, you know, they call FDTN the Disney World for firefighters. They said Jim McCormack and his group have got it dialed in for sure.
It's wild, man. I mean, retired FDNY Lieutenant Tim Klett, he led the whole engine ops thing. He's awesome, man. Just a ton of knowledge. Every instructor there is dialed in. It's crazy, man. Like, you know, you hear the term fire nuggets or nuggets all the time. It's just nonstop there, you know. It's also the basics. It's repping the basics and picking up those just constant nuggets from other people around.
That definitely. No, that's what it is. And I seriously, like me and you, we're kind of close in years, you know, career wise. And it's one of those things, like if somebody were to ask me, hey, like 10 years ago, were you always into the job? I can honestly say I wasn't really like into the job, but I knew my job. It's not like I breathed, slept, and lived the job. Like I understood the role, I understood things that I needed to do. But it wasn't until at least 2 or 3 years ago where I started kind of going in deeper into knowing my job.
Absolutely, man. I mean, I don't think if you asked, you know, the guys on my shift, or especially on my rig, you know, how's Dave operationally? And I don't think they would speak bad about me at all. I mean, you know, I think they might, you know, I would hope that humbly hope that they would, you know, say that I would definitely get it done. But being into it and being able to do it are two different things in my opinion,
Absolutely.
you know.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. 100%. 100%. So, would you say that's where the daily refinery grew from that experience?
Yeah, I mean it's for sure. I mean I don't think he cares, but I mean, like, when I was at smoke diver school, man, my smoke buddy was John Sparrow, which was like a kind of a surreal thing to begin with. I mean,
Fuck
I'm part
yeah.
mean I was I'm part of his Patreon, which is an awesome platform too, man. His daily stuff that he's got going on, highly recommend it. But I had just messaged Because listening to podcasts, being into it again, I'd messaged him on his Patreon. I said, "Hey, the oldest dude that I could find going through Smoke Diver was 50." He asked for questions, and I said, "The oldest guy going through Smoke Diver was 53. Have you considered it?" And he didn't really respond. And then he hit me up privately. He's like, "Hey, just so you know, I'm going to class 64." And I was like, "Get out, man. That's crazy." And then when they sent the smoke buddy list out, he texted me. He's like, "Hey, brother, we're smoke buddies." And I was like, "What?" But
That's wild.
and for anybody listening, man, John's awesome, man. I mean, what you see is what you get. He is 100% genuine, man after God, strong in his faith, a go-getter, get after it, dude. I can't speak enough about him. I mean, we became, I would say, good friends in a very short period of time, for sure. We still chit chat, often.
That's wild, man. It just goes to show you such a small world. Like the
It
fire
is.
service, it's large when you look at it, but really, it only takes a small person to go, "Oh, I know that person. Yeah, I know that person," and they make the connection, and all of a sudden, like your name is being spoke about, hopefully in good context, which is why I always tell people, your last name is all you got. Don't tarnish it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I mean that, like, to go back to what you're asking, I mean, I would say he probably was a big motivator for like the Daily Refinery thing. I actually ran it past him, like, "Hey, man, what do you think? There's a lot of dudes out there trying this, and I definitely don't want to be perceived as just a social media guy." And I told him, I'm like, "I could care less if I have one follower or a million. I'm kind of doing it to just inspire and encourage other people, man, that, hey, you can do this, and guess what? Also, it's pretty fun too, man." So give it a shot, which is why I try to think of like real creative, weird stuff, man, like a mile of inchworms. That sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Who
Out,
would?
but we thought we were going to do it a mile, and we ended up doing it 60 minutes because we had time restraints. I don't even think we made it a third of a mile in 60 minutes. It probably would have taken us 5 hours, but it's been cool, man. I mean, I with the Daily Refinery thing, I do believe firmly that you really there's like it's kind of like the whole trifecta needs to be complete, like physically, mentally, spiritually, I think we need to be, and I tell my kids this, "Hey, you need to be physically strong, but you can't be a muscle bound idiot. You need to be strong and smart, but you can't be just a book nerd, and you can't help anybody out or pick up anything. So you need to be strong too." And I definitely believe you whatever it is for you, you need to be have some soul health. If that makes sense. Do things that will enrich that part of your life too as well, and that kind of completes it. I mean, that's why like most of my posts I always have like a little message from the good book, a verse from the Bible, and kind of like a application of what that means to me, and if it means something to you, that's cool. If it doesn't, no sweat off my back either, that's
And since starting it, have you had good feedback from individuals?
it's all been positive. I thought I would get like a bunch of hate. I mean, I get a little razzed at the firehouse every now and then. And like at the firehouse when they say, "Hey, today's refinement," and I go, "Hey man, that means you were watching." If you know that, then you tuned in, so that's cool. But no, man, it's been real positive. Reaching out to some of the guys that I would consider, especially in like the gear workout, physical fitness part of the fire service that we have come to know a little bit, Marcus Orozco, Roberg, Jay Worthy. I mean, a lot of these guys that are doing this, I tagged them and they tagged me and they share it and I share their stuff. And I hit them up on direct messages, yourself, and it's all been like just positive. It's pretty cool, actually. I was a little
Definitely.
shocked by it, you know, because, you know, firemen, we love to hate. Even Broberg said, you know, our one of our biggest issues, we need to stop eating our own.
He's right.
He's 100% right, man. I mean, that's why, like, the other day I was like, you know, Broberg was right. I think I'm gonna just try to do a post on praise in public, you know. And I couldn't have chose two better guys that have been my lieutenants, and, you know, one's my boss now. Is just, they're awesome dudes.
Yeah,
So.
no, I mean, but you know, it's always a question you wonder, and sometimes I wonder, is it because that individual doesn't know that skill set? They can't complete that skill set, and that's okay if you can't, because like there's dudes around you. Well, hopefully there are dudes around you that if you go to them and go, hey, like I notice you're good at this, I want to get good like that, can you show me? And hopefully that individual goes, yeah, absolutely, and they don't dog you for it. But like it's kind of like I always kind of you know, equate the fire service to high school. You know, like there's cliques, certain cliques, and if you're not part of the cool kids club, you're looked at as an outsider. And at the end of the day, like if I'm looked at as an outsider, like I'm okay with that. And but what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna put in that work that you're not seeing, because it all kind of goes back to that slow station you talked about earlier. Like I want people to know. There are sometimes, like, if your department's not that big, where if you put in a transfer, it's going to get granted. You know, there are some departments where you could put in a transfer and it's like, listen, we don't have the people to move right now to make this
Oh,
happen.
yeah.
You have to make do with what you got. Being at a slow station shouldn't be seen as a punishment, because in my opinion, those slow stations, yes, they're slow, but the percentage of them getting a really good call is actually high. And the fact that most of the time those are the outlying stations where people that are responding to that first due, it's going to be a little bit where you're going to have to like cowboy up and do your job.
Oh, yeah.
So you need to be on top of your game more, in my opinion, when you're at a slow station. Because just because it's slow doesn't mean it doesn't have the potential.
I can't, man, I can't agree with you more. I mean, the one station I went to is probably one of our westernmost stations. It borders West Virginia and Maryland as well. It's actually like the tri-state area is right there. And they, you know, they used to, well, and they still do, but I mean, we would run into West Virginia and Maryland a lot, much more rural, but also I would say not poor, but more impoverished areas, you know, just, I guess, more country, you know. So, and we ran a lot of fire, man. I mean, at first, probably when I first got there, I was like, this is kind of a hidden gem, man. Nobody wants to come out here, but they run fire, you know. And if they do run a wreck, it's usually a good one. And if they do, and I'm not an EMS guy, but we're all EMTs. If they do go to an EMS call,
It's
if
usually
it ain't
legit.
a headache or a stomach ache, it's like my femur sticking out of my leg. You know what I mean? Because those type of individuals, that I guess that those people, they don't call unless it's crazy or bad. You know, that's just how they were raised. That's how they're tough country people. They don't do that.
Exactly. No, everything you said, man, I agree. But it's because I now, granted, my current station now is not the busiest, and it's one of those things. It fluctuates. Last shift, we ran seven calls. Granted, six out of the seven, or seven out of the seven. No, six out of the seven, we got canceled too while we were almost there. It happens. I mean, we're a ladder
Sure.
company, but you know, I want people to understand, like, a slow station is not a death sentence, because nothing lasts forever. Just like a bad crew isn't your career. Like you're going to sometimes be put with individuals you don't really like, individuals that aren't into the job like you would like. Just got to buy your time. But during that time, man, there's no greater time than finessing your skills, getting good at the basics.
I agree, man. And that was my mistake. And I remember looking at my chief when I was going out there first. I said, well, I'll either get strong and smart or fat and stupid, you know. Instead of focusing on fire skills, or doing firefighting activities like that, I guess more involved in now, the gear workouts and stuff like that, I could go back and start doing that then, but the past is the past, you know. I focused on, I worked out and I went to college and I got a degree. But it was more, you know, selfish and just for me rather than, you know, rather than we and the team and where I work at. That would be the biggest thing I can encourage is, hey, you know, like I was saying before, you can't consume 24 hours at a slow station with training and eat. But take, you know, 2 to 3 or 4 hours of that and really be attentive and focus on those fire things, you know. And we did train, you know. I mean, it's not like we just sat around and did nothing. But being more attentive and just being more into it for sure.
Okay. Definitely. No, I definitely understand your sentiments. And, you know, like I said, I just want to reiterate, you know, I don't want people to think like a slow station is a death sentence. It's really not. Like, there's things you can do there for sure. But with that being said, you kind of mentioned before you were selected to go back to FDTN after they had a couple of people drop out. Are you still looking at becoming an officer in that process?
Oh you know, I 100%. I to me, I think it's I'm big on putting myself in uncomfortable positions, and I think that's when you grow the most. And I know, you know, not that I'm like again the best rescue driver in the world. I don't think that 100%. But I think moving up to that position would be a huge growing move for me in my career. And I before I was like, yeah, I think I should do it. I'm gonna do it. And now I'm kind of excited to do it. Yeah, our county has a really awesome like command competency lab, you know, where they can go into a room and run calls, if you will, first on scene, you know, give on scene. I was actually there yesterday with my boss. That's a cool thing that we have, a good asset that we have. Yeah, definitely. I'm a
Okay.
fan, man.
Okay. And I wish you the best of luck in the process of everything going through that. With that being said, though, with you wanting to become a company officer, what does leadership look like to you? Like, what do you want to emulate? If you're given that chance and successful of becoming like a company officer.
Big question, leadership.
Yeah.
So going back to what I was saying before, I've had, I mean, tons of great officers, man, tons of good models, you know. Man, I'm 46. I really don't, you know, I respectfully name drop a lot of them, you know, Bernie Gotham, Corley Gregg, you call him GG. Jimmy Gray, Chris Kirkstra, all phenomenal leaders, all great officers. The officer that I have now, Lieutenant Dan Bush, man, he's the best, and I've told him this before, he knows it. He's the best leader that I've ever had across the board, like construction world, military world, and fire service. The biggest thing that I probably have taken from him, and I'd heard it before. We were having a conversation one time, and I forget how it came about. And I was like, well, you know, I said something like, you know, we work for you. And he stopped me. He's like, oh no. He's like, I work for you. And it just, and like I said, I had heard, hey, a good leader works for his people. They don't work for him. But when he said it in that moment, I was like, it just made sense, you know? And in my opinion, there's no better like character trait to have as a leader than humility. Yeah, my degree was in leadership. And so, I mean, that's what was taught about in that. And when he said, I work for you guys, and he does, you know, all of our lieutenants, you know, on my ship do. Just being humble, you know, and working for your people, you know, you'll catch my boss washing dishes, man. You know, and I mean, he's like I said, he's 30 plus years in this, you know. He was a lieutenant when I started.
Damn.
So, you know what I mean? It's pretty, it's he's been a huge role model for me as far as what to do. There's a lot of people that show you what not to do. And he's not perfect either. He knows that. And we've had our growing pains like any crew should, you know. You don't like again, you don't grow unless you have some pain involved.
Absolutely.
Discomfort. But I get that's leadership to me is supporting and working for your people and being humble. I mean, I trained at a jiu-jitsu gym in Hawaii one time, man, when I was in the Navy, and it had a sign above the door and it said, "Drop your ego here," and had an arrow pointing at the bottom. Not pride, because I mean, I think pride's important. Pride and, you know, your parents, pride and what you do, your work ethic and everything. Drop your ego. And that's leadership to me.
Definitely. I mean, you know, so you're starting to see that more in firehouses where it's like drop your ego at the door. And I think, like you said, pride is one thing, but individuals do need to check their egos because, you know, sometimes that plays a role in people's arrogance. That'll play a role in like people not wanting to approach you because you're not approachable. Like that's one thing about the job is, and you know, I'm sure you've heard this before, like this job will humble you.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I always go into the mindset of like, I don't know it all, but like I'm not gonna tiptoe around out in the field, but what I am gonna do is I am gonna respect it. So, you know, I watch for signs. Look for key indicators, things of that nature. Because once you think you have it figured out, you don't.
Lets you know real quick. Real quick.
And you know, I think that goes a long way where individuals will look at a certain situation, you know, especially with now current days of social media, man, news travels super fast. You can have video of a 4-alarm FDNY fire, you know, where they had that rope rescue not too long ago. And I think firefighters get a false sense of, well, that can never happen here, or a firefighter having to throw a ladder real quick to get a person out of a window or whatever. And I hope I don't hit a nerve with anyone listening or anybody that's in your organization. But you know, here recently, you guys had a line of duty death from a natural gas explosion. And I mention that because we had one not too long ago where, bro, when I pulled up on scene, I was looking around like, what just happened? Like, never in my career did the amount of damage, like, I mean, personal belongings were out in the street, shirts, socks, sneakers, and it's like, you know, structure fires, yeah, it's kind of common, like what you'll see in a structure fire, but seeing a home leveled was wild. But with your guys' experience losing one of your own, man, that's why I always tell people, don't ever say like, oh, that situation or that event can't happen here, because it can. And like, I'm not wishing any harm, but like the way my mindset works is it's just a matter of time for me. But like, that's how I look at it. I hope it never does, but I don't go with that approach. My approach is it's just a matter of time. So why not prepare for the event that can never happen?
Dude, anything can happen at any time. I mean, in regards to that, God rest Trevor Brown. I didn't know him, but prayers to his family and stuff. The prayers to all, everybody was there. Everybody was there on that call, man. I mean, you couldn't have had better people there. I can't speak on it too much. It's still an investigation and stuff, but I mean, listening to the radio traffic was very hard. I mean, I knew a lot of the people on the call, and but also listening to the voices of the people that I knew. I was like, oh man, thank God they're there. Those dudes are hitters. Those dudes get after it. Those dudes are competent. Those dudes are passionate about the job. They know what they're doing. Obviously I wasn't there. I went there a couple of days after to help out with our tech rescue support unit and everything. Got to work alongside the ATF, which actually was very educating, and yeah, I've been fixing houses, fixing foundations for years, man. And it was very unbelievable what I saw,
Right. And I mean, it's one of those things, you know, like honestly, I can't stand whenever you hear like somebody telling another firefighter, hey, why do you train so hard? Why do you work out this way? You know, like that'll never, like the fact that you say that and the fact that when like I sit down and realize what exactly we do, like it is me to me 100% the greatest job in the world, but the amount of, I guess you can say, pressure that we put on ourselves when, like, the community expects when an emergency happens, we're gonna react. We're gonna react proactively and professionally. And whenever you see or encounter a firefighter who treats the job like it's a joke, it's just kind of like, and that person has, even if you don't have a wife and kids, but you have family, it's like, do you not want to come home? Like, what you do here in this profession, like your legacy is told. And this part right here goes very true to whenever you hear like a firefighter go, hey, you ever heard the name Dave Malden? Yeah. What do you think about him? For me, whenever they start with, he's a good dude, but like that's not a good thing. Because like you want firefighters when they say, hey, your name. Oh man, jam up. He trains very hard, really good work ethic, positive, always into the job. You don't want them to be like, yeah, he's a good guy. You know, we talk here and there, but it's like, would you want that person on your team? And no, if you take egos out of the equation, but like skill set, would you want this person working with you, or would you want that person coming to rescue you? If they say no, like that should hit a nerve or trigger a response in your head of, what have I been doing? But the fact that we're so complacent, or we're under that mindset of it'll never happen here, you got guys that don't think like that. And well, maybe they know deep down inside, but they put on that front or that bravado that they don't care. But like, you seriously should care. Like, if somebody doesn't, that's kind of like when we were little and you get picked last for a kickball team, that didn't feel great.
You know what I mean? Like a lot of people say you don't know what you don't know, and that in certain contexts that's true. But you know when you don't know something. You know what I mean? Like, overweight firefighters. I don't need to go up and tell you. You look in the mirror every day when you shave, or at least the day you come to work when you shave. You know that. I don't need to tell you that. I don't need to tell you that your skills aren't on point. I knew my skills weren't on point, and you talked about pressure. I feel more pressure now because, like, man, not that I wasted 14 years, but now, like, I feel like I got to read everything. I got to listen to every podcast. I got to go to every conference. I got to catch up. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many things I got to learn. When they talk about, like, if you think you've learned everything on this job, you need to leave. That's true because
That's
there's too much. There's just too much to learn.
absolutely.
Yeah, everybody knows. I knew, that's how
It's
it is,
just,
man.
yeah, it's just it's like sometimes, like I think about it too much, but I'll seriously sit down and be like, do you not notice that? Or do you just not care? Because like it's, you know, it's one of those things, you know, even if you can do everything right in this job and something can still happen. So why not do the preparation work now to be prepared just in case it does, where you're not caught off guard?
Yeah, I and like it, and it's a process too. Like, I didn't, they talk about the born again firefighter. I guess I'm that. I don't know. But it wasn't like I found Jesus and I'm perfect now. You know what I mean? I still do dumb stuff. I still, miss a report or I still my boss say, hey man, did you get that done? Oh, let me get that done. You know what I mean? Like, it's a growing process. It's just a continual working upon it type of thing. So
Yeah, it's just
yeah.
one of those things, man. But I've never heard of that, but I kind of like a born again firefighter. And it's not like in a bad way, because like I said, I can relate to you. It wasn't until I got to a certain point. Now, granted, like I was never like a D-bag, but I could have put more effort into things, and you know what I mean, and got a little bit better, or kind of studied the equipment that I had a little bit more, where somebody goes, hey, what kind of nozzle is that? I wouldn't look at it like, well, it's just a nozzle. Like, no, there's brand names, there's tip sizes, there's pressures, little things like that.
Oh,
So,
let me Google that real quick. Yeah.
right. 100%, man. 100%. Let's see what I want to ask you here. Did I ask you what the term aggressive means to you?
No,
Okay,
yet.
well there it is. That's the question. I couldn't remember, man. We've been talking so deep, like good things, but I've kind of lost track a little bit. So, in your opinion, what
That's
does the
good,
term?
man.
No, I've loved the conversation so far.
Yeah.
100%.
I mean, when you reached out, I was like, man, I first of all, I feel like I'm not worthy.
A lot of
There's some of the
people say
guys in
that.
my department, man, that like again run circles around me, but like when you asked me, I'm like, I don't know, I don't want to be interviewed. And then when you said it's just a conversation, dude. And I even ran it past one of my brothers at work, man, phenomenal guy. On A shift, on the rescue, and he's like, "Hey, man, he asked you, just tell, he asked you. You didn't ask him. You didn't approach
Right,
him. Just tell him
right.
your story." And I was like, "You know, that makes sense. It's a conversation." Aggressiveness. Did you see? I know you did. You commented on it. The video of the Stockton firefighter.
Yes.
I mean,
You, I, I'm, are you talking about the one where he got some comments for going up to the door and bow and then getting it done? Yeah.
I don't know when that video was, but my man gloved up in the rig, got out of the rig. I don't know if he was sprinting, jogging, but he was moving with a purpose and a decisive purpose. Straight to the door. Everybody said mule kick. That was not a mule kick. That was a front kick. grabbed it. Closed it, turned around, and the hose line was there. I watched the thing 20 times. Plus, they were playing Mobb Deep to it. I mean, I grew up in 90s hip hop, man. Like I was jamming to that. I mean, and then that prompted me, man, to ask the question, do you run on the fire ground? And that got a lot of feedback from that from some good people. I even reached out to a guy, he's a PG County officer. And I was like, do you run on the fire ground? And I said, do you? And I don't ask these questions because I have this answer myself. I literally want to know what people are doing. And he had a really great response, man. He's like, he said, I used to run all the time, like sprint. He said, now he goes, I move with a tempo. He said, especially as an officer, because I have to take in so much information. He's like, I'm not walking, but I'm not sprinting. And that to me, like a decisive tempo is what I consider aggressive. And that's different for everybody, man. Like, I don't know if you ever read or know about like On Combat with Dave Grossman, Colonel Dave Grossman.
I've heard the name in the book, yes.
He talks about like these different levels of stress, he categorizes them into colors, red being that optimal range of your heart rate. I don't know, it's about 110 to 140-ish. Then you go into gray, and then you go into black where you've kind of lost your fine motor skills. It's tough. You can't, your tunnel vision, auditory exclusion, ocular exclusion, all this stuff. Well, if you're sprinting and you put yourself in the black, what's that going to do for you? You know, I mean, what's that going to do for your crew? What's that going to do for the people you're there to be helping, the citizens? Now, if your fitness level, going back to working out in gear and being prepared, if your fitness level says, hey, I can sprint and still be in the red, which is the optimal range to operate in, go for it. But if your fitness level or your preparedness level or whatever skill set too, is not there and it's placing you in that gray or that black zone, then you need to slow down, because you're going to hurt yourself or hurt other people. But like
Absolutely.
going back, you know, and I passed this along to my officer too, and that's kind of what he said. He kind of agreed the same way. He's like, hey, you know, I used to sprint, and I've done it too, man, thinking, hey, we need to be running. I've jumped off the rig, man, especially as a rescue driver. Sometimes we're out and I don't have my bunker gear on and we get punched out for a box, whatever. Well, now I got to get out and get dressed, you know, while they're bolting. And so now I feel like I got to catch up.
Yeah, you're playing catch up,
Yeah. So I've sprinted and literally been on my hands and knees, you know, sucking wind and like going, oh my God. Versus taking a little bit more time, kind of what you were saying, move with a purpose. But that goes back to where are you at? Like if you can move faster and still be in that red, like Grossman talks about on combat, then do it. You know, be as aggressive as you can be. That decisive kind of tempo. That's what I've been thinking about, you know, because I know you asked this to everybody. So that's kind of where I think it should be. It's really personal to each individual.
Absolutely.
You know, you definitely shouldn't be walking.
Right. Like taking your time, moseying
Yeah.
in. Like, you know, like what are you doing? Like, I know my training chief hates when, like, you know, we do usually quarterly in-service training. And so, like, whenever he has whatever scenario he gives you and the apparatus pulls up and the guys are just taking their sweet time, like, I know that chews him because he's like, the way I look at it as well, and I'm sure he has that same mindset. How you play here is how you're going to do it out in the real world. And, you know, whenever it's an emergency, citizens don't want to watch a guy like just take is like, it's like, bro, move. And it goes back to yesterday. I'm sure, I don't know if you follow Nick Martin on social
Oh
media.
yeah.
He
Oh yeah.
showed the video of his rookie firefighter on his first do, going to his first do, first structure fire, and he had mask up and the nozzle and water applied in like 59 seconds. That is
Yeah.
awesome for a rookie.
What do
And
you mean, masked up in 16 seconds with the gloves on?
that's right. And so from mask up to water on the fire was like total of 59 seconds. And that doesn't happen overnight. Like firefighters will look at that guy and be like show off. And it's like, no, it's not a show off. That's a skill that you have to perfect. Masking up with gloves on is a skill you have to master. Like, I remember when I first heard about that at a conference, I'm like, you mask up with gloves on? Like, damn, usually gloves are like the last thing I put on. And then I started listening to different people talk about time. Time is our enemy. So why not already have it on where that's one less thing you got to do? So when I started doing that, messing around with it, man, the amount of curse words that came out of my mouth, how like my helmet would be this way, the hood's
Oh
this way. And I'm just like, how are these guys doing it? And I just figured out my way and I got it down now. It's one of those things like everything we do, like it just doesn't happen overnight. You have to put in the work on it. And there are some people out there that don't want to do that. They're like, well, masks or gloves are going to be the last thing I do on. It doesn't matter. But when you're struggling at the front door and you're using your teeth trying to get it on because your hands are wet, full of sweat when it's hot out, you know, all that stuff counts.
Well, I mean, that's how like the glove mask up thing. I mean, we've been in the same time. I mean, when you were in crew school, that's how we were taught. You know what I mean? My gloves were laying beside my helmet and they were the very last thing that I put on. You know, and I was the same way, man. Like that we've kind of made it a goal on our rig at the rescue is like, hey, when you're going to take your air pack out every morning, you damn well better, you know,
Hopefully,
that's
right?
your lifeline.
Yep.
So when you're checking your air pack out, do it with your gloves on. So we just started doing that every time we checked our air pack out, and we do it with our gloves on. And over time, you know, it's just sets and reps, man. You get better at it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Sets and reps for sure. I'm trying to see where I want to ask you because we're pretty deep in, man, with no hiccups, which is awesome.
Part two.
Oh man, trust me, we could do that if you'd like. We could talk about whatever, but no, let's with your time being on the job and stuff. One of the questions I like to ask is, wellness and truly being there for one another. Like, how important is that? Because it's easy for individuals to tell you, like, hey man, I got you. If you got anything, you got any problems, call me. When you call that person, they never pick up or call you back. So especially with everything going on in the fire service now with mental health and everything, like, what does wellness and truly being there mean for you?
Like wellness as in personal wellness, and
Sure. It could
is that
be.
like two separate things? Wellness for you and then also being there for your brothers and sisters.
It could be both ways, yes. Because like you seriously, you do need to take care of yourself sometimes before you can worry about others. Because like if in here isn't right, which we do have people that are really good at that, like in here is not right with them, but they always make sure that other people are squared away. And then like God forbid you hear something, and it's like, how did this happen to this individual? They were
Yeah,
always
man.
here. So yeah, just
Yeah, dude.
in
I
your
mean,
take on it.
I mean, even in my own department, man, it's a pretty close hitting topic, man. We've lost a couple dudes to suicide in the past couple years, and it sucks, man. Like, one I really didn't know, one I wasn't super close to, but I knew him well, you know what I mean? And always had a smile on his face. He was the nicest guy in the world. You would have never known. But like, we've enacted a huge like peer support group within the county, which I think is a huge benefit, man. Phones are always on. Somebody's got a phone on if you can talk to, just talk to anybody. Center of Excellence is nearby us for that stuff. One of the coolest things I think, and this is very shift specific, within our shift, is like after lunch or after dinner, sometimes we will go around and say one nice thing about someone else on our crew. It's funny too, because when we have overtime or detail people in, they're like, "You guys do what?" And they get real uncomfortable, and they're like, "What are we doing?" But just going around, man, and it's always different. And man, it can be like, "Hey, so and so took the trash out. I really appreciated that." It can be as mild as that, or sometimes it gets deep and heavy, "Hey, so and so did this for me, and I greatly appreciate that." That has a lot to do with being there for people. Just having conversations, man, and talking to people. Going back to what Broberg said, man. We need to stop eating our own, man. We need, we at least when I started, even today, I mean it. The fire service is a very roughneck, blue collar in the trenches type of environment, man. And we have always held a lot of stuff internally. And to me, man, I love to tell people, like, I try to keep a smile on my face. It ain't always there. One of the things probably recently, I always come to, "Hey man, you happy? You having fun?" Going back to what my man Mueller said, if you ain't having fun, you ain't doing this right. But doing that exercise around the kitchen table, which is where all the world's problems are solved anyways, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to, and some people say, some of the guys on our shift will say some things you just don't expect, That's a good exercise. I encourage that for every shift, to just go around and say a good word, Ain't nothing wrong with saying good work. Good works are free.
No.
Praise is free.
Yeah.
Praise is 100% free.
Yeah,
And
definitely.
it picks people up, man. You don't know what people are going through. You 100% do not know what people are going through. Because usually when people are going through the hard times, they don't like to talk about it.
Yeah,
And
no, definitely right.
a kind word, man, that means a lot.
Absolutely. Goes a long way. And I kind of look at it as, the sense of when somebody achieves something, that you might think is minuscule, what you don't know is you didn't see the work that that individual put in to get there. You know what I'm saying? Like, for some reason, a lot of firemen have notions that, oh, well, that was easy or whatever. But no, like, you don't understand. Like, there are some things people have to, like, adversities and fears and challenges that people still have to go through. Like me, one, me, you know, me, I'm an open book, man. Like, back in the day, to tell you, if I were to tell you, like, hey, your future self's gonna put in for a ladder truck, I'd tell you, ain't no fucking way that's happening. Like, I knew ladder trucks existed. Man, I hated anything with ladders when I had to get, my JPRs and my certifications. Like, I did it, but I was like very slow at doing it. Granted, now I still don't like run up on these things. Like, I'll see dudes on aerials just like standing straight up, going down the rungs, and I'm like, I'm a little bit more cautious than that. You're going to see me having like 2 points of contact on this thing,
Right.
but I have told myself, like, bro, like, stop letting that deter you from experiencing what it's like. Like, open up to it. Like, embrace your fears. So, and I mentioned this to the Relentless Rejects. I always draw blanks with names. I talked to so many people. He's probably, if he's gonna listen, he's gonna be like, "Oh my God, you don't know my name." But I do know your name, bro. I'm just, hold on, I gotta look it up because I have brain freeze moments.
I know exactly who you're talking about. He's in the Navy. He Navy
Yes,
veteran.
Preston Lyons.
Preston,
So, like, when I talked to Preston, and I was very open, man. Like, I embraced it because if anybody would tell you, be like, "Oh yeah, he's a good dude," but ladders, heights, nah. That's not Danny, but like, I just learned to. I was open about it, and I just kind of, I told him when I talked to him in my interview that I got in our ladder truck and I started slow, man. I went up like 50 feet. I went up there by myself. I didn't want anybody else with me. I went up there by myself, and I just looked around. It's like, okay, this is not bad because like when you don't understand something or you fear something, like the way my mind works is, I'll be up there and I'm like, I did set up the outriggers right? Like all the lights came on, like the
The
truck's not
thing
gonna
ain't gonna
tip
tip
over, bro. So when we got the ladder truck, our newest one, Pierce came down and they sent a representative who's like a whiz on, he showed us all the stuff you could do. Like it was mind-blowing what that truck can do. And so I asked him, I'm like, hey man, like this thing won't like tip over. And he did one maneuver with the truck where he took it out and extended it. It was pretty level, but it was extended all the way out. And like he grabbed onto the truck and he's like, look at the truck. He said, look at the outriggers. And the other outrigger, when he was pulling on the bucket, was making it go up
off the
in the
ground.
air off the ground. And I'm like, he's like, I can slide a piece of paper under that right now. And he's like, this thing ain't going nowhere. He's like, I'm not going to tell you accidents happen, but it's usually like human nature. Outriggers aren't properly set up, or if they short jacket, you're not supposed to operate on that side. He's like, but if you do everything right, man, this truck is solid. And he's like, people that make way much more money than me compute all this crap and
Einstein's.
get it dialed in. So he's like, get that notion. So that's what I tell myself, like, get that freaking notion out of my head. The truck's not going to tip. All the lights were green. I'm good to go. And so it's just the fear. And some people might look at that and be like, oh, this guy's a fucking punk or whatever. But it's like, no, I embraced it. And I'm not saying like I'm 100% non-fearful. I still, there's certain things, man, like when I'm in the bucket, like if I don't know you ain't operating that thing because I'm not having you do all this and that while I'm up there. Like, we ain't doing that. But like, you got to just learn to control what you can control, but also don't let a fear stop you from exploring other things.
100%, dude. Like, one of my One of my favorite quotes, I don't even know who said it, is freedom is on the other side of fear. You know, and I tell my kids that all the time when
That's
they're like,
beautiful.
let's do
Yes.
something, man. Like, and like to your respect, like I think that's one of the big things, and I know it was for me. You know, when you're a rookie and you're making mistakes and people razz you a little bit, you know, whatever, you're a rookie, you're not supposed to know anything. But when you're 14 years in the game and you're assigned to a busy house and you're on a, you know, a piece that's supposed to be, you know, well knowledgeable or whatever, you don't want to mess up around your peers, you know, because it's almost like, wait a minute, you're supposed to know this. So the further you move down the game and refer, you know, as far as your fire department career goes, the harder it is to come outside of your box and try something you don't know about. You know, that fear grows. It really does. But if
Absolutely.
you can just say, you know what, screw it, I don't care what anybody thinks, I'm gonna do it. And if I mess up 30 times in front of people that think I should know it, I don't care. You know, same with going on like with your podcast or with social media, man. You put yourself out there, you know. No one, like I told you before, it's all been positive. No one's, you know, hated on me, but I'm sure people have watched or listened to your podcast and go, man, that dude, what did he do? What's he thinking? You know? But the more you can say, you know what, I don't really care about the hate, you know, I don't care about the fear, the freedom will come, man. Like, it's when you start to know it and when you get good at it, it's very freeing. It's very liberating for sure.
Definitely. And I love how you put that, man. On the other side of fear is freedom.
Absolutely.
I like that. I really do. I really do. 'Cause I mean, I think there's a lot of us out there that have, like, if you're not scared or a little bit fearful doing this job, there might be something wrong with you. 'Cause like, you know, like you respond to a house fire. Never been in this person's house. I don't know the freaking layout. Like, yeah, we can kind of get a generalized sense, but I've never been in this house before. And then you add it's pitch black heat. Like there is a, you should be a little bit, which is why for me, like I always respect it. And I'm open. Like if someone's like, were you not scared? Yeah, there was a little bit of scaredness, but like, I'm still going to go ahead and do my job because that's what we're here for. That's what we've
Oh
been kind
yeah.
of trained to do.
Yeah, I mean there is a line, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, too much confidence will can linger in the cockiness, and that can breed complacency, and complacency get you hurt, get you killed.
Absolutely.
So I mean, you know, there is definitely a line, you know. Climbing up mountains, man, like walking across crevasses and glaciers, you know.
Yeah, I give you that respect. I ain't doing that.
People
I ain't climbing no mountain.
like, hey, are you afraid? You know, what, at 16,000 feet with a crevasse on your left and right that are, you know, five, you can see China from, you know, like, yeah, it's fearful. But when you conquer that and then you summit the mountain and you're standing on, you know, what I call top of the world, you can literally see the curvature of the earth, you know, I mean, it's the reward. That's the freedom, man. It's, you know, it's awesome. So
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Absolutely. My last question I always like to ask all the guests, man. I know you're in the process of you know trying to become an officer, but where would you like to see yourself in the future? Like where do you think you'll be?
I mean, I'd like to be definitely like to be a lieutenant. For sure, 100%. That's why I'm pursuing it. I do think, you know, I definitely would like to go to a busy engine, if I could. And, you know, a lot of our new lieutenants go to the relief officer position, which I think is extremely beneficial, because you get to go around to all the different. Like I said, I mean, Loudoun's very diverse, man. You can be on a rural kilo box with tankers and stuff, and you know, one day and work overtime the next day and be running a high rise. The next day you can be in a data center. The next day you can be in a metro. So doing that, definitely would like to be LT, be on an engine for a while, get those reps in. A solid time. I don't know what that time is. work and work my way back. I love truck work, man. I
Okay.
love slinging ladders. I love forcing door. I force for entry. I love force for entry. Some people I know, this is probably get everybody riled up or whatever, but I think truck work is kind of like a happy medium between engine and rescue. You know what I mean? You
Right.
still got some rope stuff. Search, is a huge aspect of truck work and rescue work. And then work my way back to a rescue. I think that'd be awesome, man. I'd love to do that. Beyond
Awesome.
that, man, I don't know.
Awesome. Awesome. And before we head out, you're one of your videos at the end, you're preparing for something, right? Like some sort of event. Race type. You said something at the end. It was a video of when
Oh,
you did the
standby.
hike.
So, like, my son and I, we're going out west. We're gonna go climb Mount Adams
Okay.
here in a couple weeks, June on the 22nd. So
Okay.
it's his first big mountain. He's 16, so it's gonna be very eye-opening for him. It's kind of tame for a big mountain. It's the second largest stratovolcano out in the Pacific Northwest, second to R Mount Rainier.
Okay.
We've been do putting a lot of hiking in, so I'm still doing some gear workouts, and that was like one of the, I'm like, man, I haven't done a gear workout in a couple of days, man. We need to get on the trail and get some elevation. Hell with it. I'm gonna put my turnout gear and go up this. And I'm honestly, full disclosure, I got about halfway up. I was like, man, I don't know. I think I bit off a little bit more than I can chew, man. This is getting strenuous. But again, just push through it, and got to the top. So that's what it is. We're gonna go take a climbing trip with my oldest son.
Awesome,
Super
man.
excited about that for sure.
Definitely, definitely. I wish you the best of luck. Definitely take some pictures for others
Oh
to
yeah.
see. And Dave, like seriously, man, I really appreciate you coming on. I know I had to kind of we had to change some dates around and things of that nature, but I really appreciate you accepting the invite, coming on to talk. Like this was just a great conversation with two dudes who I can relate to everything, the 16 years in, but the last 2 years you've really been into the job. I can kind of say that like the last 3 or 4 years for me, it's kind of struck a nerve. And I'm sure there are some people out there like, well, why are you doing a podcast or why are you talking about it? Because it's like when you don't know what you don't know and you finally get it all in, like for me, everything starts clicking. It makes sense of why we have people out there that are spreading the message about time. Getting to the truck fast, masking up fast, getting geared up fast, knowing your job. Like it truly all makes sense to what we have to do, our responsibilities out here to the citizens. So I just want to say thank you. And thank you for with your daily refinery that you're spreading the word as well of like, hey, it's okay to be into the job. Like this is what we're supposed to do.
It's best job in the world, man. And I mean, dude, like seriously, huge honor having me on. I mean, I've listened to a ton of your podcasts, a ton of your episodes. Love them all. There wasn't one that I didn't pick something up from. Again, going back, I was like, well, why me, man? You've got like FDIC keynote speakers on here. I'm just a dude that drives a rescue and likes to work out, and tries to get after it, but very humbling and an honor, man. It's been a great conversation, dude. 100%. If you are in the DC Metro, Northern Virginia area,
Awesome, man.
I'll come to North Kakalaki. Definitely say what's up.
No, definitely. Hit me up. You got my number. You can hit me up, man, and vice versa. Definitely. I actually will be well. We gotta see what's going on with the little one. We have a trip planned Tuesday to go see my sister-in-law who lives in Burke, Virginia. I don't know how far Burke is from where you're at. Burke is near like Fairfax.
Yeah, that's we border Fairfax. We run mutual
Okay.
aid Fairfax.
Okay. So
Yeah.
I'll kind of be in the area, but we're not sure what's gonna happen with this one. We gotta make sure that she's good. But no, man, that's what I like. Like, I love getting the invites extended. That's what firefighters should do for each other. Hey, man, if you're in the area, come by. I'll show you around. Or if I'm at work, come by, show you the station, things of that nature. I know where you're at, your station. Like I said, I am a nerd. I watch plenty of response videos of Leesburg. I follow them. I like what they do. And I love that, your county pretty much works hand in hand, man, because even though to me there's no difference really between a volunteer and a career person, it's all on what you make it, because we're essentially all doing the same job. And I think we need to be a professional at both, whether you're a volunteer or not, getting paid or not. Like, if you put on the gear, you take the oath, like, we all need to be professional on it. That's just my take on it.
There's good and bad in both, man. And at
Absolutely.
the end of the day, like, going back to the motto, would you want you rescuing you? You know, that stays in my head. You know, when I'm at work, man, and like, people are like, I think to myself, who's coming to my house? You know, I want that my man from Stockton, you know, to jump out the rig and kick in my door and grab my wife and kids. You know what I mean? Like
Absolutely.
my house is on fire. That's what I want. So yeah, I mean, 100%, dude. This has been a great conversation.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you. And like I said, man, I am always willing to do a part two, and we could talk about whatever, man. So, just keep that in the back of your mind. Like, if you're like, hey, man, I've had an event, or I had this going on, or whatever the case may be, let me know. We'll gladly schedule up and, get you on for a part two, because I'm sure, the listeners love and can relate to your experiences that you've had in the fire service, for sure. Because I know I can.
Right on, bro.
Appreciate
Whatever.
you. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Bye.
Appreciate you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.